They also get access to a piece of software by which they can reuse their own information once it has been transformed from free text into variables. So it's something that the doctors enjoy very much because they don't have to collect their own registries anymore. This is done by a machine now.
Welcome to AI for Pharma Growth, the podcast from pioneering pharma artificial intelligence entrepreneur, Dr. Andre Bates. This show aims to demystify AI for all those in biopharma, from startup biotech right through to big pharma. Each episode focuses on all things AI and future tech related to help pharma execs to navigate through the and benefit from the sometimes confusing but magical world of AI-powered tools to grow and get real-world results.
Today's episode is about how pharma can use artificial intelligence to generate deep, real-world evidence for data-driven healthcare. For many years, pharma have used traditional patient registry data, observational studies, claims data, ICD-10, ICD-9 codes, and more. But now we actually have access to real-time electronic medical records data, not just claims data that someone has arbitrarily chosen what variables they're going to include, but we have comprehensive databases that can be updated directly without intermediaries and interrogated much more powerfully with artificial intelligence techniques. And the timing of what we're going to talk about today is perfect because real-world evidence and deep real-world evidence is actually what is needed more and more and demanded. Today, I'm with Dr. Ignacio Medrano, the founder of Savanna, whose absolute focus for 8 years has been in developing a methodology through which AI tech meets science standards while controlling bias and missing data to create deep real-world evidence. Thank you so much for coming on the show. It's a pleasure to have you. Maybe we could start with you telling me a little bit about your background and how you got into this and what led you to found Savanna.
Sure. It's very good to be here. So I am a neurologist. My parents were both doctors, so I had no choice but to become a physician. And then I became a neurologist where I practiced and I practiced in Madrid for 10 years. I became chief of residence, so I was always a bit into, let's say, the management side of things. Mm-hmm. And I was also in charge of the strategy of my hospital, leading that for 500 researchers. And I realized that there was a huge gap between what was happening in the world of technology in general, with what you could find in our cell phones, basically, and everywhere else, and the kind of information systems that we were using for research. And I thought that solving that gap was worth it. So I decided to become an entrepreneur. I stopped my clinical practice for some time, and I went to Silicon Valley, where you're supposed to go if you want to become an entrepreneur, at least many times. Yeah. And I was fortunate enough to get into a program at the NASA installations and led by some big tech companies there. And after that, I was ready to start my AI company.
And so tell me about your AI company, Savanna. What kind of things do you do in the deep real-world evidence space?
So the story is quite simple. Until quite recently, everything we had regarding medical records was on paper, was handwritten. Mm-hmm. But then some countries started moving with this, and now the transformation in the Western countries is not complete, but almost complete. And I come from a country, from Spain, where originally, for some crazy historical reasons, I don't know why, but we were ahead in this. Yeah. So probably after the Nordics, we had the highest penetration of digital medical records. Okay. And so the idea is, if all that information is gathered there every day, why should we go and generate a secondary data collection? Why collecting data a second time for research when that is already written in our daily job? What about if we build a machine that is able to extract that and harmonize that into one single data model that then we can analyze with several purposes? That is an obvious idea that saves a lot of time and effort, but it's not only that, it's also that gives you richer information. And that's what we're doing.
Yeah. I find it amazing that you started this 8 years ago when, you know, 6 years ago, the medical, the FDA did the 21st Century Cures Act. So you were 2 years ahead of them, where they were really stressing the need for this kind of real world data to support regulatory decisions and approvals. And they're even using real world evidence and real world data to, you know, monitor post-market safety, adverse events of new drugs. And they've already made a number of evidence-based, you know, decisions and approvals. Could you speak to how Savanna can help with these areas?
Yeah, exactly. So there is a need for real-world evidence. Everybody knows that. We've known that for some time. But the problem was collecting the data. So yeah. It's basically big data. It's a lot of data. And until you don't have the technology, you cannot do it. Because this is not about going to the music store and buying CDs. You need a real Spotify. You need to be able to stream, to have a streaming of data. So the technology was needed. But then once we had the technology, which is basically the ability to talk to different EMR systems and being agnostic to them, to the different healthcare providers, even if we have this thing that we call natural language processing, which is the ability to transform the free text in the clinical notes into variables, even if we have that, it's not enough. Because we're talking about research. This is research grade. And we need to be sure that the variables that we extract from the text and that we harmonize have enough quality. So what we needed basically was a methodology on top of a technology. Mm-hmm. So that it's not only with natural language processing, but with a validation that tells you that that you extracted the right variables to measure the survival rates in multiple myeloma, for example, and the creation of that benchmark by which humans can, in AI, we call it annotate. It's basically train the AI to be sure that it's as good as if the data had been collected manually. That is really our fingerprint. That is what we started creating 8 years ago and what made it possible for us to be serving these kind of projects around the world to all kind of pharma companies in all kind of pathological areas.
That's really interesting. So could you tell me a little bit more about the platform itself?
Yeah, sure. So basically, this is a platform that is today available in German, French, English, Spanish, and Portuguese. Mm-hmm. So the translation is not immediate. We can translate into any other Western language in a few months, but it's not from one day to another. Okay. And Eastern languages is another story because this is very related to the characters that we read. Yeah. And there's a lot of plain text there from the informatics point of view. Sure. So that's how it works. And regarding languages, it's expanded in Western Europe and the Americas, which relates to the languages where it's available. And it basically, what it does is it goes to the medical record system and in an anonymized way, that's absolutely key. So respect.
Very important, yes.
We're operating in countries like France, Belgium, Switzerland, you can imagine.
Yeah, so with GDPR and everything, yeah.
It's very important. Also with the UK, with NHS and so on. So basically, in a private way, in an anonymized way, we are able to read the information no matter where it comes from, every variable from every patient at every time they were taken care of. So mm-hmm. that at the end of the day, we're going to have a significant amount of information coming from the sites that doesn't belong to us formally, contractually. We're just the operators for these sites, for these hospitals to be able to enter into what we call the biggest AI clinical research with AI network in the world. We believe it's actually the biggest one, at least to our knowledge. Yeah. And so thanks to this platform, they're able to put it together. So these two hospitals from London and these two from New York and these two from Madrid, they can cooperate. Then we're ready to launch a protocol and do a descriptive or a predictive analysis. And maybe something also that we should remark is that when hospitals enter this network through our platform, they not only participate into this international research network led by studies, by projects, mm-hmm. but they also get access to a piece of software by which they can reuse their own information once it has been transformed from free text into variables. So it's something that the doctors enjoy very much because they don't have to collect their own registries anymore. This is done by a machine now.
Lovely. That's very cool. How quickly is the data updated? Is it real time or is it done in batches once a day or how quickly?
Technologically, it could be as frequent as we want. The thing is that it's very expensive.
Yes, cervicals. Yes.
Servers point of view. And it's not worth it because this is not the stock market. We don't need that refresh. We're talking about research here.
Yeah.
So we have learned that refreshing the information, even every 6 months, for example, is more than enough.
Okay.
So 3 months, 6 months, it depends.
Okay. And how many electronic medical records roughly would you say you had in your system or access to?
So this is getting updated every day. I get lost now because we're recruiting many sites much faster than we did a few years ago. But last count with a batch that came from the US a couple of days ago from Pennsylvania should be around 3 billion clinical documents.
Yeah.
So clinical acts. That's not patients, obviously.
Yeah.
If we had to put that into patients, it would be 20 something. But once more, it's important to remark that from those 20 something million patients, we have an incredible depth because we have literally tens of thousands of variables per patient.
Amazing. And what countries does it include at the moment?
Western Europe, so Central Europe and UK and Spain, and also the US, now starting Canada, and the majority of the big Latin American countries. Now, our next objective is Italy. We're going for Italy now.
I'm sure you'll get it very quickly. So I guess with that many medical records, you must have pretty much every therapeutic area that you can imagine contained within those.
Yes. The thing is that today you want to create a new registry into a disease, a type of cancer, immunological disease, doesn't matter. You don't have to do it. You can call the machine and it's going to create it for you.
Yeah.
And there's no reason why you should exclude any pathological area.
Yeah.
There is some specific linguistic training that needs to be in place every time we do a new analysis. So, for example, if we go for ovarian cancer and we want to do a new study there, there's some, let's say, fine-tuning that disease. It takes us about 3 months.
Okay.
Across all the languages and all the countries, about 3 months. There is like a factory for fine-tuning variables per disease, so to say.
You basically need to do like a therapy area dictionary for the natural language processing.
Exactly. It's like we at the beginning, when we onboard a new site, we run general NLP, which takes care of things like acronyms, copy paste, these things. But then we have to be specific per pathology. This is the value proposition. This is what many tech companies, even when they do NLP on electronic medical records, this is the last mile where normally they don't get because this is very research specific.
Yeah. So the kind of analysis you're doing, there's so many different applications that pharma companies could actually use it for. So just to name a few, you know, optimizing the design of randomized clinical trials, finding new targets for molecules in drug development, accelerating time to market of new medicines, improving the targeting of drugs already in the market and finding safety issues, understanding risk-benefit trade-offs of specific drugs, and even just serving as an additional source of evidence in drug approvals. So what kind of challenges have pharma brought to you so far?
Yeah, so a typical study for us would be to one in which we talk to medical affairs or sometimes the real world evidence team, sometimes the HEOR teams, more market access oriented. And we typically look at a number of sites per country. We do create an international data set in this pathology, trying to solve this business problem that then transforms, or our data science team transforms into an evidence problem, right? Evidence generation problem. We go, let's say, retrospectively 5 years, for example. It can also be updated prospectively if needed, because, for example, it's a commitment with an agency that already approved something. Sometimes it's more for informing reimbursement discussions. Sometimes it's more for positioning a drug in front of the community. So we go from the most, let's say, descriptive type of studies where it's more patient pathways, which they obviously benefit a lot from this methodology because of the richness of the information. Sometimes it's more epidemiological and so on, but sometimes it gets more predictive, more complicated from the machine learning point of view. And we run analyses that go beyond classical regression, classical statistics, thanks mm-hmm. to having that big data lake.
Yeah.
And we do things like phenotyping or clustering the types of patients that are responding most to a drug, nice. Which is very interesting for positioning.
Absolutely.
So that phase four market access world is where we come from. That's what we've been doing. But there's a very obvious interest into moving into earlier stages.
Yeah.
Upstream and going more into things that we are now designing with some customers, like synthetic control arms generation,
mm-hmm.
That type of things, and into so maybe into the R&D world. Answering your question, the question is always: have you already used this in front of the regulatory bodies of the FDA? Our answer is always the same: we are ready. Our data set has the quality that the agencies are demanding. But
yes.
from the regulatory point of view, we need to have the experience with the customers that want to be the first ones into getting there.
Nice pilot for someone to pick up. So interesting. One of the challenges I see a lot of pharma companies having is access to the right data because of this whole point of patient confidentiality with medical data is often also unstructured. And sometimes it doesn't have that historical element to it, depending on how it's been put together. And I have noticed some other platforms out there are inadequate, actually, for clinical use because the factors that are affecting the health outcomes aren't taken into consideration during their development. And so that means that generalization from specific use case studies is difficult because of the technical differences between the types of medical equipment and the variations in coding and medical practice. Could you speak to how Savanna overcomes these challenges?
Yeah, exactly. That's our native problem, right? We believe in a world where there is no need for this classical terminologies because those are, in fact, those are codes that we create because we need to have a common standard, we need a language. But there is a situation in which if you apply natural language processing and AI, you can create new entities as clinical reality evolves.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing with classical terminologies. There's always a new concept that you don't know in which box you should put. That's what happens with ICD codes, which is not valid for clinical use research. But if you basically learn from reality, from what you're finding in the medical records, your dictionary can be infinite. You can make it bigger and bigger as you read more and more. That's precisely what we do. We create new boxes every day.
Yeah,
it's much more flexible, much more plastic, and much more intelligent from the, from the methodological point of view. So that's the way we operate, and we overcome that problem. The only thing that we need to do is to make sure that when we're going to run a new analysis in a specific disease, we need indeed a group of human beings, of experts in the field that say, this is the minimum common denominator. This is mm-hmm. the variables that no matter where it's written, we're going to infer as being, for example, the progression at 3 months in this particular area. So we get to a human agreement, and with that, scientific work that we do at the beginning, then we're ready to go to the data scientists, the AI people, and they can program the rules to extract that information.
Nice. Could you, most of the audience listening to this are pharmaceutical, so it would be great if you could outline one or two case studies of what challenge some of your pharma clients have had, what they were doing before they came to you, and what kind of results they got from working with you and the platform?
Yeah, of course. We have some publications in our website where we're trying to show the type of studies that we find interesting. But basically, we're now looking at a case where a particular customer, they wanted to, let's say, screen the patients that would benefit from a genetic test that only when being positive to the test, their drug would be applied. that is very costly across geographies. So why don't we apply our machine learning system on top of all that information to create an algorithm that is able to predict which patients have a highest likelihood of being positive to that genetic test. Okay. That's very cost efficient. And, yeah. and I think it's one of our most successful use cases. Nice. That's one. The other one is related to being very, very fast at finding the state of the art of a particular type of cancer in Europe in a situation where there were basically no registries or the access to them were super limited. We're talking about Central Europe, UK, and so on. In just a few months, we were able to go to the to these hospitals and to extract the patient pathway prevalence epidemiology without having to create any observational study, any registry. That's basically the big benefit.
Very this nice.
Is like owning an observational registry without having to create it.
Wow. And I guess it takes about 3 months after someone comes to you to set up, or is that only if there is a new, if it's a therapy area or a specific thing that you haven't done before? How long does it take normally?
So what is important to understand is that the data that we handle, we don't believe in monopolies. We are creating a federated network of hospitals that participate thanks to our technology. That mm-hmm. means that every time we want to do a new analysis, generally speaking, we have to go to the hospitals and we have to tell them, do you want to participate or not? Even when we already handle their information. But they have to opt in for that particular analysis.
I get it.
Which means ethical committee and protocol.
Yeah. Okay. That so takes, that's going to take time.
That takes about they're already participating with us. We have like yeah. master services agreements. The information is already in place. So it's not that slow.
Yeah.
But it's not immediate. So maybe we could say that 6 months is
reasonable.
Is accurate for getting all the sites,
yeah.
not the first ones, but all of them, the ones we select. And then 3 months for that training. So in less than 1 year, we are ready to provide results. We compare to ourselves to studies that takes 3, 4, 5 years.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And what kind of benefits are your clients telling you about after using the service that they're seeing?
So basically, in a nutshell, we've seen that the ones that came and then came back, what they remarked was, first, access to data in Europe.
Yes.
That's not easy. The real-world evidence space, as we know, is very developed in the United States, but not that much in Europe. We have reasonable access to European data thanks to our respect for privacy. We have an interesting database. That's one thing. The other one is the data science, let's say, advanced machine learning capabilities to be able to analyze. Just to give you an idea, one of the big pharmas that participates with us, after seeing our results, they came back not for medical records information, but with their own clinical trials databases nice. For us to reanalyze them.
Okay.
Because we have a very powerful engine of data analysis.
Yeah.
So that's also something that they found interesting when they worked with us. The other part would be the natural language processing capabilities, because we're basically moving literally from registries that are limited to 200 variables into registries that have tens of thousands of them. I like to say that it's like having a CRF with an undo button. You can go back and forth.
Yeah.
That is super flexible and they really enjoy it because they can always reanalyze.
Yeah.
And that's particularly probably the reason why American companies, even when there is a lot of offer of real world evidence in the US, they come to us because we can offer these three things combined.
Yeah. What about the costs compared with the traditional approaches for doing this kind of thing? How do they compare?
So we have always had, let's say, an approach to market where our cost needs to be the same as the market. With the positioning that we have is we don't want to make things complicated for the teams that want to contract us by raising the prices, saying that what we offer has more value, but then getting into issues with budgets and so on. We want this to be smooth and fast and to get implemented as fast as possible. At the same time, we strongly believe that the value that we provide is way more higher than the one provided by the traditional industry of observational research. So that's why positioning is equal. So we're competing in every offer, maintaining the prices of the market.
Okay. Wow. Well, I really am impressed with what you guys are doing. I would love to see even more countries in your network, which would be incredible. So for any pharma companies listening today, if you want to get in touch with Ignacio and his team, if you go to SavannahMed, SavannahMed.com, you'll be able to read about it and get in touch with them and see more about it. Thank you so much, Ignacio, for coming on the show today. Really appreciate it. Fascinating work, and look forward to hearing more in the future. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of AI for Pharma Growth. If you have received huge value from this show, or maybe this episode has highlighted how you can use AI in your company, then we would love for you to support the show by leaving us a 5-star rating. Please make sure you hit the subscribe or follow button on your podcast app now to make sure you never miss an episode.